been a shitty day, boys.
Why?
Just
tell me why. Tell me why. Tell me why it's been a shitty day.
Yeah.
I thought you were going in sync. Tell me why.
Yeah.
But instead, you took "Tell Me Why" and put it to Grease.
Yeah.
Okay. It's been shitty because work sucks, and also there was big wind when I got into my car to come here for the podcast, and my door flew open and slammed into my wife's car, causing a large dent and scratch.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I wish I had been somewhere else when that big wind came through. In fact, I wish I had been anywhere else.
If you were everywhere all at once, it would include the place that you were at the time.
Yeah, but it all would also include a lot of other places. Our cars, so I could like reach out and stop the door before it slammed into my wife's car.
If you're between them, you don't have to like reach out to stop. You just will be there and you will stop it.
Well, right, but I'm also everywhere, and so I'm also like a little ways out where I still have to reach.
Yeah, but
I don't know. I
way.
Haven't seen this movie yet. Hi, I'm Josh. I'm an analyst here in Nashville, and I've got big old googly eyes.
I'm Rick Fox. I am an author here in Nashville, and of all the places I could be, I just want to be here with you guys.
Oh.
I'm Brian. I'm an illustrator here in Nashville. I don't think I know anything about this movie.
I'm Caleb. I'm an analyst here in Nashville, and I've got some dope-ass earbuds that let me traverse the alphaverse.
And we're opinionated.
And tonight, Rick's still going out of town in the next couple weeks, and so we're postponing listener requests some more. So tonight, we're watching Everything Everywhere All at Once. Everything Everywhere All at Once came out in 2022. It currently has a 95 on Rotten Tomatoes. Mm. It was written and directed by Dan Kwan and Daniel Scheinert, and it stars Michelle Yeoh, Stephanie Hsu, Jamie Lee Curtis, Kwan, and many others.
A middle-aged Chinese immigrant is swept up into an insane adventure in which she alone can save existence by exploring other universes and connecting with the lives she could have led.
That sounds sick. Also, I scrolled down a little bit further on IMDb, and another person in here is Biff Whiff.
I like that.
I like okay. that name. That's a good name.
That sounds like someone who boofs.
Oh, he boofs hard.
That's his brother.
Boof Whiff.
Yeah.
Boof Woof.
Boof Woof.
No,
that's his dog.
Is Biff Whiff the boofer?
Yeah. I don't know anything about this movie other than everyone who's seen it has been like, I love this movie. And a good chunk of them also were like, it was so moving, I cried at the end.
Hmm. Okay.
But I don't know anything about the actual like story of it.
That's also like everything.
Have you heard
I've
about
seen,
the bagel?
No.
No.
Okay. I've heard about that it is an everything bagel, but I mean,
yeah, but I don't know what context the
I'm sure
the
that means a lot
bagel
in this
matters.
In this universe of everything everywhere bagel.
Well, we'll get there.
I'm sure we will.
Have you guys seen any other
I've seen trailers.
Noteworthy pieces of Asian cinema that haven't been action movies, such as Parasite, for
yes,
example,
Parasite.
Or like having watched
I haven't seen Parasite. I saw Snowpiercer.
Also good.
And I like that a lot.
The TV show of like that was the game show. What was that one?
Oh,
Squid Games.
Yeah. Squid Games.
They are interesting. As far as this movie goes, I know obviously from the IMDb as well as the trailers that there's like realities jumping or alternate mm-hmm. universe yeah. jumping, mm-hmm. and it's one person that can kind of connect with her other selves in these different realities.
Right.
But I don't know why she's doing it or what she's going about it for. Caleb, you watched this recently, mm-hmm. which is why you suggested that we see it. Rick and Brian, have either of you guys seen it?
No.
Or is it just Caleb?
I've seen the prequel, which was called The One. It was a Jet Li movie where he heals himself over and over again. We need to do that podcast one day. No. Listeners, request that one. That'd be a great one.
I mean, we have watched worse movies.
Yeah.
But
yes,
not much worse.
Caleb, what, I mean, aside from it just being generally regarded as a phenomenal movie, was there something that drew you to this? Or, like, what's your reason for suggesting it for us tonight for the podcast? Is it just that it's a fucking great movie and you want to see it?
Well, one, like, have any of you guys seen Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon?
It's been a million years.
I have not seen that movie specifically, although I've seen lots of movies with that same style of action.
Stuff.
Yeah, the Wuja action.
Not as much about the action, about one of the actresses that is in that film is the protagonist in this movie.
Okay. Cool.
So you are going to see some dope-ass martial arts.
Yeah. Excellent.
Well, and Michelle Yeoh? Yeah, Michelle Yeoh has been in a ton of stuff that I have seen, and like she's always amazing in whatever she's in. Yeah.
Right. And so there's that, and that component is entertaining, but there are other components that are a step outside of this podcast comfort zone that are also thoroughly enjoyable and I think will make for great conversation starters.
Okay, I don't want you to tell us what's outside the comfort zone. I just want you to tell us where our comfort zone is in your mind. And then we'll kind of each individually interpret what that means for us this evening, and then we'll go watch it.
Basic bitch action movies.
Fair.
That's definitely not outside of my comfort zone.
All right, well.
Movies.
I'm looking forward to going and seeing this. It's
basic
bro
action movies.
It's been on my to watch list for a long time, basically since it came out.
Yeah.
I've just never actually sat down and done it. Before we get going, though, just a reminder, we keep postponing Listener Request Month because people go out of town or are sick. And so you still have time to recommend movies.
We'll start at the beginning of March.
We say.
Hopefully.
If you want us to watch The One, suggest that. If you have some other fantastic or really shitty movie, send that to us at our email, opinionatedmoviereviews@gmail.com. Additionally, if you want to help support the podcast, you can do that on our Patreon. It's patreon.com/opinionated. For as little as a buck a month, you get all sorts of bonus content, including listener requests, some first impressions, as well as early access to all of our episodes. We always publish our episodes there as soon as we're done editing. Sometimes that's the night before, and sometimes that's as early as a week before. So if you want to listen to it early, definitely go check that out. It's patreon.com/opinionated. Guys, we'll be back in just a minute after we're finished watching Everything Everywhere All at Once.
I'm not your husband. I'm another version of him from another universe. I'm here because we need your help.
Very busy today. No time to help you.
Across the multiverse, I've seen thousands of Evelyns. You can access all their memories, their emotions, even their skills. There's a great evil spreading throughout the many verses. And you may be your only chance of stopping it.
Don't make me fight you. I am really good.
I don't believe you.
A spider clit is like an echidna penis, where it's just got like eight heads. That's what a spider clit is.
So eight opportunities to have orgasms?
I don't think that's how that.
I didn't know. I think it's
got balls.
Brian, into your mic. Out. I think that it's got the same nerve endings. It's just spread out across eight nubs, which means that you've got to be extra dexterous to really
right.
get all
to really
all
like
nerve endings
to have the going. Same experience. You have to be able to stimulate all eight clitorises
at the same time. Now, yeah. You know, still like within a range. Right?
Yeah.
It's like when you're shooting or darts, you've got like precision versus accuracy or whatever the two, where one of them is, are you shooting where you want to? And the other one is how close is your spread? Whatever the difference between those two. I don't know the
sure,
actual terms.
Sure.
It sounds to me like technique is about to become really important.
Yeah. Yeah.
They should be a sport.
I don't know what the appropriate way to come back in after that movie is.
To segue.
But this might be it.
I mean, you could say that having a whole bunch of hot dog fingers would help with the spider bite.
I don't think that would help your precision or accuracy.
Hey, just slap them all up on there.
I mean, if you had to live your life with the dexterity of your feet, you might get really good at it.
That's fair.
Oh, yep.
Okay, so leading into this discussion, because I have a feeling, given the nature of the movie we just watched, I'm gonna guess that our discussion is going to A, jump all over the place, and B, involve a fair amount of hopefully good-natured bickering, given Rick's penchant for just fucking hating anything that's like artistic.
Okay.
After the first hour, he was yawning ad nauseum, and it was
angrily
distracting.
He was angrily yawning. I'm tired and pissed about it.
Okay.
I can't tolerate nuance.
Here's the thing. I did not like this movie.
However,
go on. There,
what was that movie we watched with Andreas?
Mother.
Where, not that one. That one actually sucks.
Wait, the
one
where, the one with the ball, the deaf guy. I'm glad that I'm blind.
No, the one where I got really mad at it, and I was like, "This isn't even a story. This is just nonsense."
That
on a movie.
Sounds super familiar.
There was a movie where like we had a huge fight in it, and I was like, "This isn't even a story." And I tried to explain why I didn't even think it counted as a story.
I don't remember.
But you know what?
Had that argument so many times.
That's true. There's been a couple, but there was a big one. Anyway,
you can't remember this, anything about what happened at that point. That movie.
There was a lot of blue and Jason Statham. This movie, I think, is similar to that movie from what I remember of it. It was also very weird, but
you can't remember it.
The important thing is that I don't think that this movie is like this movie. I think that there is
the one you can't remember.
You don't think that this
movie is like
that movie?
This movie?
I don't think this movie is like that movie in that this movie is, does have a story.
Strap
it is,
in,
it is, it is telling, it is telling something. There is something in here. I don't know that my brain can access what it was trying to do.
You know, that's one of the most humble things you've ever said, Rick.
Maybe I'm trying to read too deep into it then.
Okay. Because I'm not going to diss you too hard about it because I felt this way the way that I felt the first time watching something like The Matrix or Inception, where it's like, I feel like I get it about 80% and
yeah,
then there's like right. 20% that
which
I want to
like
watch
a little
again
too
to like
cerebral
understand.
For me to comprehend right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, but The Matrix
or not even too cerebral, but there's so much going on in the movie that to be able to pick up the layers of the onion is going to take... I can't just be trying to focus on what's happening at face value for the first time. Yeah. I have to have already know what's happening so
right.
I can start paying attention to the other like
that's,
aspects of
that's
it.
That's sort of what I feel
to
like
that
is
effect,
going on, yeah.
I've brought a notebook in to try to write down details to remember what the hell happened in these movies. And about 40 minutes left in the runtime, I ran out of room on the page and just
yeah.
stopped.
My
that has never happened before.
My interpretation.
Rick. Fuck. Brian, I don't do that. One page per movie.
That's right.
Fair enough.
My interpretation of what the story of this movie is,
mm-hmm.
or the message it's trying to convey, or at least what I picked up from it, uh-huh. is that in the grand scheme of the universe, we are small beings, and it's easy to say, what's the point? You know, it to be very nihilistic and say... Yeah.
What do you do with nihilism?
Yeah, nothing matters,
sure.
so why even try? And the response is, nothing matters, so be kind, right? Mm-hmm. Which is what he says, and so show love, have those relationships, and that's put on top of the story of a daughter... feeling frustrated with her mother, and similarly, that mother also feeling frustrated with her father, who's a senior citizen at this point. And it kind of it tells what I feel is common for a lot of people, where you've got these simultaneous feelings of frustration with your parents because they just don't understand you or they don't respect you for who you are, but also simultaneously wanting their respect and love despite that frustration.
Yeah, sure.
And I feel that for a lot of people that's a very common feeling to have. And so it's combining those two elements into this story and portraying that in a very creative way.
And I think a big part of why this movie is hitting very weird for me is that everything that you've just said could not be further from my experience of either reality or beliefs about it.
Sure.
So like it is difficult for me to engage with just because it is so foreign to my way of thinking.
Well, and also, although this may come across as an asshole thing to say or like me getting onto you,
sure,
I don't
sure.
mean it that way. I just mean your personality and what I know from you as a person and as a friend is mm-hmm. that it has not been particularly easy for you to understand or empathize with people who have very opposing life philosophies
yeah,
from your own.
Absolutely.
It's difficult
yeah.
for you to understand where they're coming from. It's just like, you're crazy for thinking or feeling that way. Why are you the way that you are?
Correct. Right? Yes. Everyone should be exactly like me. That's the only way that makes sense.
No,
I do agree with that. Whether I guess criticism is what I would call it, but I don't know if that's like the right word
not,
for what
I'm
you're saying.
I'm not meaning
yeah.
it as a pointed stick. I'm
yeah,
more
exactly.
meaning it
that's just
we call that egocentrism.
That's an explanation why you
yeah.
probably have a hard time with this this movie.
That is a good description of a part of who I am. I agree with that. That all fits perfectly to me. It's not necessarily a good thing. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing either, but it is a facet of who I am, and it is very difficult for me to engage with things that are very foreign to my way of thinking.
Right, which is why all of our listeners should take Rick's opinion on this movie with a very large grain of salt, and should really just listen to what Caleb, myself, and Brian.
Look, the closer you are to my opinion, the closer you are to correct, so that's all that matters.
I disagree. You should see things from my perspective. The movie takes a quick turn. I like what it does setting up these characters. Rick, mm-hmm. at one point you said you really disliked the characters.
Oh, yeah. No, I hate all of them.
Because, like, they're dickish. I liked the way that we're introduced to our main character. I can't remember her name.
Mm-hmm. Main character? Evelyn.
Evelyn, yeah. That's right.
There's Evelyn, there's, what's her husband?
Gong, who is the father. There's Waymond, who is the husband.
Instead of yes. Raymond, it's Waymond.
And there's Joy, who is the daughter.
Right.
Who also is Jobu, the sort of antagonist.
Yeah, the bag evil guy.
Jodu Tapaki. Yeah.
Right. And I like the way that we're introduced to Evelyn. Mm-hmm. It does a good job of setting up kind of how dissatisfied with her life she is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is like... Yeah. Very much they do a brilliant job of creating quickly a context and almost giving it too many details, because as a Westerner, I don't think I have quite the same level of patience or tolerance for the details of a life that Easterners really seem to enjoy embedding into a story. It's that slice of life way of telling a story that is just, you get so much out of very little.
Right.
And we're so accustomed to this Marvel, DC, superhero, flashy bullshit that we don't have tolerance for it.
For like the layers of it.
I think the general populace might not. I really enjoyed this slice of life kind of stuff.
Yeah, I do too.
And you're right that it is not common in like very pop culture movies in America, right?
Yeah.
But it is something that I enjoy. This... Everything, Everywhere, All at Once does not like overstay its welcome with that kind of thing.
No.
I could have enjoyed more, but it very quickly gets them to, you know, you see that Evelyn is heavily stressed out, and it appears assuming basically all the serious responsibilities for the family.
I think what's interesting about Evelyn to me is that she is someone who is very clearly trying to control everything, and also very clearly is failing to control anything in her life. She is trying to force everything into its place, and nothing is going where she wants it to be at this point. And I think that is
and you can see that from
good point to put her.
The tax lady, the IRS agent, who is played by
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Jamie Lee Curtis, who I did not realize for the most part of the first watching of the movie. But you can see that just from the fact that she is, it's almost like you get the impression she is inventing hobbies so that she can try to justify expenses that are necessary to keep their business alive.
Yeah, that makes sense. She is using these things that she does to try and get tax write-offs that will allow them to continue to do.
Think that if we had a karaoke machine, we might survive, and therefore I'm going to create this narrative that I'm actually an aspiring singer so that we can get one and I can justify its existence to the tax.
It also kind of plays into the general vibe of the movie in that she is trying to be everything in this opening scene, and that's sort of what that is conveying, I think, in a sense.
And it's contrasted a lot with Waymond. I almost corrected to Raymond. It's Waymond.
But you have to watch with the subtitles to understand that is how they spell
it
every single time.
His name is actually Waymond.
Right.
But it's later on in the movie you find out what Waymond's philosophy is towards life why he acts the way that he does, and it puts it in a new light where he's intentionally like trying to find the joy in life regardless of their circumstances. Mm-hmm. But early on in the movie, you kind of feel for Evelyn, because she's out here trying to like do taxes and like manage the business, and she's like, hey, where's our customer's clothes? We run a laundromat. Where's our customer's clothes? He's like, I moved it. It was happier upstairs.
Yeah.
And she goes up and he's like, it's on a shelf with googly eyes.
Right.
And like, I would be pissed off by that. Yes. If I'm trying to run a business and my partner is moving shit around to like put googly eyes on it, that would piss me off.
Sure.
I get that. I also see a lot of how she is creating these situations for herself.
Yes.
She is, and because of that, it is very difficult for me to sympathize with her.
Well, but the movie even goes out of its way to show, because later on when Alpha Universe Waymond shows up.
Yeah.
like, it's such a stark contrast to her current universe, Waymond. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, it goes out of its way to make him seem like a loser.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he is.
I would say, like, I huge props to, I don't know
something
who played him.
Something Lee Kwan, I think, is his name. It's
Josh is
going to
look up who his proper name
Indiana
is.
Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
The way that he acted, the just flipping the switch of from being like Beta Waymond to Alpha Waymond.
It was incredible.
Quite literally.
Kei Hui Kwan.
Yeah. Was spectacular.
Yeah.
He blew me away.
Absolutely. Like, this movie is filled with people who are doing incredible acting, in my opinion. Yeah. But I think that Waymond really does stand out in that.
He does. So they're at the IRS and they...
Having a tax audit.
Like you do.
And it's on the way up to this audit that Alpha Waymond...
They're riding the elevator.
Yeah, that Alpha Waymond puppets Beta Waymond.
Right.
We're just going to call him Beta. Mm. And... This is where the weird shenanigans start. What do you guys think of this
introduction scene?
I guess because I kind of like how it ramps up her universe jumping.
Right. Because
she's not actually jumping universes. She's more just like accessing the information about an alternate universe.
But she's kind of also like halfway living in there too.
Right. That you are kind of jumping. It's just that. It is, sometimes you can be in both places at once, it seems like, and sometimes you are in one and jumping into another.
Yeah.
Because she's going back and forth between a lot of these universes. Right. She's just, the Evelyn that we are following is absorbing the information and at times experiencing the existence in these other universes.
I really like the concept of verge jumping, like that you can access yourself in a different universe, but with a different set of like
skills.
Yeah, and then you can like gig a different set of skills on top of that combine well with the other set of skills, like the lung capacity and shit.
You have those skills, but the cost is your consciousness is in a small component remains inside the universe that you got the skills from, and you have to contend with that.
Yeah.
I don't think the movie, this is one of the few flaws I have with the movie. It does not convey that as a negative enough to me. At the beginning, it's like super dire. If you do this, you're going to eventually, your mind will break and you'll die. And that never even comes close to happening.
Yeah, but she's the chosen one, so.
Exactly. And so it doesn't feel like it doesn't feel like a weakness in the power system, if you want to put it that way. It just feels like it is
a story
thing that they are trying to push.
Yes.
It gives you a little bit of attention at the beginning, but it's quickly forgotten.
Yeah.
And I don't think that works as well as it could.
And the movie doesn't take itself too seriously either.
No, there's a point where two people are doing kung fu fighting with things shoved up their asses, which is the way that they have somehow managed to access the powers.
Rick,
of
what you
kung
might
fu.
Be forgetting is at close to the end of the first very long chapter is where Evelyn suddenly starts throwing up and becomes essentially helpless because she has pushed herself too far in absorbing skills from other universes. She does finally hit her limit and she becomes helpless as a consequence.
Briefly, but not really, because that just shifts the movie into a different direction. She becomes, I guess, helpless in that moment, but she doesn't have a clear goal at that point beyond defeating Jobu. And by becoming helpless in that moment, it makes them kind of start talking to Jobu, which is what Jobu really wanted in the first
Jobu
place.
Jobu being the dog. Evil name for their daughter, Joy.
Right. Jobu is the amalgamate. Like, there is, in the Alpha universe, their daughter, she pushed her too far using this technology that she invented.
She was the first chosen one.
Yeah, Evelyn pushed her daughter Joy too far, saying, you got to keep verse jumping, keep going, keep going. And eventually her brain broke, and Joy
absorbed all the universes at once.
All universes at once, and now she's everything everywhere all at once, right?
Right,
but
exactly.
But I would argue that Evelyn hit her limit, failed to be really a capable opponent anymore, and Jobu took advantage of her weakness to begin to manipulate her in her mind to convince her that what she, in fact, also wanted was
that
accomplish
same nihilism.
Non-existence.
Yeah.
Well, I think this is my biggest gripe, is that I think the story, like, with the whole, like, everything bagel, nothingness wormhole thing, It works much better for me as the metaphor than it does as the actual story of them going to walk through a giant everything bagel.
Well, I mean, the everything bagel is just death, right? Like, you walk into it and you finally die. Like, that's the idea there, right? Like,
it's nothingness.
Yeah.
It's the absence of existence.
It's everythingness and nothingness which is kind of like once you have everyththingness,
you become stardust again.
No, things become indistinguishable from each other, which is all, not really any different than nothingness.
I think we could try to like untangle it all real hard.
But again, this is why I have an issue with it.
But I think to me, it's just death. Like there's nothing.
Sure. I think it could just be like hardcore nihilism, like just to stop caring and to let go kind of thing.
I mean, that's the correct answer to the thing that they put forth, I think, but that's not the way.
But then she goes through the everything bagel and then comes back.
She doesn't finish going through.
She
does.
She was fucking done.
She was all the way through.
If you pull her back out, she can't have come back. That's
what I'm saying. But she went all the way through. I was watching.
That's why it can't be.
Oh, there's gonna be a little tippy of the nose or something that's not gone, and everyone's gonna like hook her by the nostril and pull her back out or something. But nah, she was all the way through, and it went back to being. It's not like
it's just a metaphor for giving up.
She's
and this being my second playthrough, not playthrough. I am watching this.
Yeah,
I agree with you, Josh, in that I was also looking for whether or not the veil closes completely over her, and it does.
No, she's gone.
I think that the movie is putting that forward, but if she pulls her back out, then to me, even if visually what we are being told is that she is completely in this thing, she's not. I don't see how you pull her back out if not. And I think that part of my issue with the movie is that it's weird to me that you have the daughter go into the thing instead of Evelyn. Evelyn is the central character of this. It's her journey. So it's odd to me that the ultimate character journey is not her going in there and figuring out herself. It's her pulling her daughter out of that magically somehow,
Evelyn very much has her own arc.
She has a transformation shortly
before the climax happens with going into the bagel.
Yeah. Right. I'm not saying that she doesn't have an arc. It's weird to me that the movie has Evelyn not directly experience the MacGuffin of the movie. It's odd to me that it chooses to have that go through the daughter, especially when the final character that we see of the daughter is not the Jobu character. It's just her normal universe daughter coming to terms with the fact that her mom kind of hates her.
They're intermingled in a nuanced fashion.
Yeah, and
her whole story is that she's seeking non-existence, and she finally accomplishes that, or does she, and she gets pulled back from the brink. That is her story, and her climax has to do with that specific facet and the fact that it doesn't actually happen.
They both get pulled back from the brink by someone that loves them.
Yeah.
Because Evelyn gets pulled back from the brink by Waymond.
Well, by her dad.
By her father and
Waymond helps, but
both.
But,
yeah.
But I mean, her at family. That point, she's also grabbing onto her daughter and trying to pull her back. At the end, isn't it just her standing there pulling her daughter back in?
I mean, it's her trying, and then her father comes up, Gong comes up in like his computer office equipment version of the mech from the end of Aliens.
I thought at a certain point they just all let go, and like I may be getting things confused because this is a confusing movie. So I'm fully
Evelyn lets her go into the donut.
Right.
Yeah.
And then
she reaches back out because she wants help.
Right. And Evelyn receives her hand, and everyone else
grabs onto
chained fashion helps pull her out of the donut.
Sure, I'll go with that.
And this feels very serious, but this is also intercut with like, because I'm sitting here and like while we're talking, I'm like, yeah, okay, I remember this. But at what stage do her and Jamie Lee Curtis start sucking off each other's hot dog fingers?
That's is very close to right thing.
That is very close to that.
And that's what I'm talking, like the movie.
When do they vape weed together?
Again, at the end, right? But it the movie, because this feels like a very serious emotional gut punch moment, but the movie keeps inserting these very non-serious moments. Like it's the
Jamie
Lee Curtis hot dog hands and Raccoonie. Having those
we haven't
two...
even talked about Raccoonie at all.
Well, because
we haven't talked about the fact that she's a blind singer in one universe,
she's
a martial art superstar in one of the other ones.
In another one, she's a different martial arts superstar with the power of pinky, like super muscles.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about some of these universes. So she's pulling from the different universes for abilities that'll help her in whatever situation she's in. In one of them, she pulls from a universe where she's like a CC's pizza sign spinner.
Yep.
Yeah.
And she uses that to spin a riot shield around and fight off a bunch of guys.
Yep.
In another one, she is She got blinded early on in childhood, became a singer, and because of that has a
dramatically increased
lung capacity. I like that. Which, one of the other skills on that list was also self-confidence.
Yeah. Self-esteem, yeah. Yeah. The weird thing about that to me, so something that does bother me about this movie is it's really strange.
It carries over to her current body.
Physical body. Yes. Yeah, like the physical abilities of other universes, like the lung capacity.
Sure.
It doesn't seems feel like that. That's not a skill. That is a physical difference
in your
body.
Okay, if that happens, why does she not get the hot dog hands?
Right, yeah.
It only carries over somewhat because the other Wayman can still do crazy things, but then there's still limits to his current body that he can do
this is still
body.
So weak.
And that's what I was thinking. Wayman complains that his body is weak. Meanwhile, Evelyn seems to gain the physical abilities of these other parallel universe versions of herself.
I think it's that the movie is not super concerned
Again,
about the details.
Take itself too
well, plus N.
Its verse jumping things are like the little headsets that your dad used to have back in 2006. Yeah.
The Bluetooth headsets that were way too big.
That way he wouldn't have to take his BlackBerry out of his belt holster.
It just doesn't take it.
And let's talk about
seriously.
The fact that like the way that you quote charge your Bluetooth headset is you have to do something that statistically makes no sense
in that universe.
And one of the examples that we see is that, like, you take a tube of lip balm, you extend the entirety of it, and then you bite it off, chew it, and swallow it.
Yeah, you are doing something statistically unlikely, which puts you in a fringe universe on the edge of your like central universe, and then that slingshots you to
and
the like
perhaps because the idea of you going from where you are right now to still accomplishing that same outcome
is so
minutely improbable that you need an also incredibly improbable event just to open the door.
And I like this because this to me falls into the same kind of thing. Like universe jumping falls in the same category as like time travel for me, where you can have movies that try to explain it way too seriously. And you've got other movies like Back to the Future, where it's just like, you drive this fast and then eventually you just go back in time. Right. What more do you need to know about it? Come on.
And nobody any other time goes 90 miles an hour or whatever the number is.
And the other thing is that just it makes for visually interesting scenes. Like you are able to do stuff that makes you just like pay attention to the screen. Like when early on in the movie, I did not realize it was foreshadowing, but there were these awards that the tax lady had that were very clearly butt pugs. And later on in the movie, we see a guy like she's trying to do something very improbable, and then we see her eyes land on the butt plug, and she and another guy fight over this butt plug for like a good minute, and then out of nowhere, a dude comes leaping up over all these office things
in slow mo
with his pants and everything down. And the only thing
his pants are off.
But it's blurred, so they like you don't see anything. And he just like power dives his ass onto
the cannonballs onto that.
I can't believe they didn't have a bigger sound effect for it going in and coming out like a pop. Yeah, yeah, none of that.
I am at least thankful that the wonderful Michelle Yeoh did not have to try and do that herself. Because when her eyes went whoop straight to that little butt plug award, I was like, oh no.
It didn't look like she was one of the ones that had to use it. I think that was just his jumping off point.
I she's way too used to that kind of thing.
Well, apparently they are too, because they didn't need, no one seemed like they were against it or like.
How many times do you think they've had, no, they had just already pulled the experiences from the universes where wore butt plugs all
day
long.
I can only assume because when that dude landed on it, he didn't sigh or like.
He wasn't having trouble doing any of the incredibly physically intensive things he does with his
I can either jump to a universe where I've just jammed this butt plug into my ass. I can either jump to a universe where I've got super cool martial arts skills, or a universe where I've got super cool martial arts skills and a gaping white asshole. Yeah. I'm going to pick that one.
Fair.
I enjoyed that specific fight scene. I enjoyed Evelyn playing keep away with it.
Yeah.
More than the fight scene with the dudes with butt plugs up their
butts. But it's also confusing because she takes the butt plugs out and that's what pulls
their powers out. Their superpowers are gone because the butt plugs are gone.
Which does not fit with the way they've explained this system at all. Like, once they've done it, it's done. They have the powers. Like,
there's so many weird ones. I kept waiting because the entire time they're fighting for the butt plugs, surely they could be doing something else, right? Like,
yeah. Well, they have other options. It's just there were probabilities for each one of having a successful jump.
While you're wrestling, just like lick the carpet or something, you know?
Right, right.
You gotta focus. You never know when you'll lose your chance at that butt plug.
I was bothered by how many of them were just like really gross. Like, have weird. It doesn't have to be gross. Like, there's the one scene where Gong Gong has
like a big booger hanging out of his
giant
nose.
Booger trail going down, and she just wipes it off and jams it in his mouth.
At least she didn't put it in her mouth.
I was expecting it to go in hers.
I thought it was gonna go in hers,
I wish it had that in
the movie. If this movie is willing to go to the level of gigantic butt plugs as a kung fu mechanism.
Because one of them is the butt plug award. And then the other one is like a child's soccer trophy award.
Something like that.
They also has a butt. Maybe it's not a butt plug that's activated. Maybe it's just as long as your ass is gape, you have the power.
As long as your ass no longer feels like it normally would statistically in this world.
Yeah.
You're good. Yeah. What the fuck?
Let's not go any further into that particular detail.
It's going to come up again. I fully expect someone to give this blank butt plugs out of 5.
Jeez.
What about Waymond using his fanny pack like a projectile out of Kill Bill?
I mean, him using the fanny pack the way you would use a kunai with chain doesn't even feel like kunai with chain.
It feels like you said from Kill Bill. Yeah. There's a character that has the spike ball at the end of the chain.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, they're both mimicking
the
same martial art style.
With the dog on the chain.
yes.
If you look. How do they refer to that character when she's at the?
They keep calling her the girl with the big nose,
and if you look at the credits,
she's got a big nose.
She just is Big Nose, and then the actress is.
I mean, she does kind of have a big nose.
Like, does she?
A little bit, yeah.
All right.
But anyway,
I'm not saying that it's like
she does something. The point is, she does something similar, except for instead of it being a fanny pack, she is using her fuzzy dog
as
the projectile
she just
kicks. And yeets.
And it didn't seem like the dog had a little headset where it got the powers of being a, like, I'm ready to be a weapon here.
But it's like snarling, like, I'm ready.
Yeah.
The dog didn't look like it came from the universe where it was used to, like, it was trained to be the chain at the end of the kunai.
I mean, it wasn't
the whip chain.
Yelping or anything. It was just ready
to
fucking go.
It was ready to fight. Even after being, like, slung around in, like, wide circles by a chain at the end of its neck.
I don't know why every time she messed up, she was scared for her, like, what do you think is going to happen to your dog if you use it as a weapon?
He can take blunt force trauma, but trap him in a fridge, that's scary.
Cold immediately takes away his superpowers.
She also does apologize. She's like, I'm sorry, Johnny, but I gotta do this.
Yeah. And kicks him.
Yeah. So we started this by talking about the different universes. There's another universe that we've already mentioned, the hot dog hands universe.
Yeah.
And I like that they go back, like, it's just a funny scene where they go back and they're like, yeah, somewhere in the evolutionary chain, hot dog hands just went out. And it goes back to a bunch of chimpanzees with hot dog hands beating the shit out of a chimpanzee with normal hands.
It's the 2001 A Space Odyssey scene of, like, where normally that's, you know, them picking up a weapon for the first time. Right. And then this one is just, there's a chimpanzee with fucking hot dog hands killing a normal hand chimpanzee. That's what happens.
Ketchup and mustard, and they keep putting their fingers in each other's mouth to come ketchup and mustard.
That's how you consummate a relationship.
Is it?
I guess so, but I
don't
like it.
Is that you eat each other's hot dog hands?
Well, you don't eat.
That one was not that was one of the gag universes where she was trying to access martial art powers and she accidentally jumped the wrong direction.
Right. It's not, yes, it is a gag universe, but it is also a foreshadowed gag universe and one that matters to the plot because a big chunk of this is her coming to love and accept the horrible tax lady that is ruining her life, and that is what leads her to have a moment of acceptance with her at the end. And this is all foreshadowed because the first time that she gets her power, the thing that she has to do is confess her love to her.
Yeah.
And in the hot dog hand universe, they're lovers. They are in a committed relationship, it appears. And it is very bizarre. Especially when so much of this universe, this movie is caught up in like the different ways that the relationship between Waymond and Evelyn can play out. And it's weird that in the hot dog hand universe, she and the tax lady still know each other, and they're just, I don't know. It's very confusing to me.
it's also a little weird how Jobu, whatever the last name,
Tupaki, I just keep thinking of Tupac every time they say it.
Their daughter, Joy, is like the villain that's been hunting down Evelyn's, I guess. But then
it's not clear. She's just, what they say is that she causes chaos and kills everyone where she goes, and she's trying to destroy everything, like annihilate all universes is what they say. But that's very clearly kind of swept under the rug by the end of this. And it's not what she's trying to do. She's just trying to, I guess, achieve self-destruction.
But she also wants to find an Evelyn that will see what she sees.
Right. That's a part of it. Yeah.
And if they don't, she will annihilate them.
Something like that, yeah.
Or if they they'll be annihilated with her.
Yeah, so, they don't spend a lot of time fleshing that out.
Well, again, this is like
the multiverse component.
This goes back to what I was saying, where I feel like on a second watch through, I'd be able to kind of piece it together a little bit better. Mm.
And I feel like if I understood, this is going to be a weird thing I think to say, but I think if I understood Buddhism a little more thoroughly, it would fit, because that whole idea of like self-annihilation is very big within Buddhism, and like that being the way to accept, you know, the life that you're given is to, you know, accept the anyway. I don't know it well enough to explain
that
it on
someone who doesn't understand
exactly.
Buddhism.
That
if
is,
you're
that
a Buddhist
is how
and you have
at the
thoughts,
beginning.
Tweet at us.
Yeah, let us know.
Sure. Oh, this is a movie.
Well, and I really enjoyed the movie. I'm not ready to get into my final thoughts yet, although I kind of am. It's weird because I feel like there's a lot else that happened in the movie, but we've also kind of covered everything
that
happened in
the movie.
Let's talk
about the daughter as a character for a bit, because we haven't really touched on her, and she is a big chunk of it. It is weird to me the way that they are separating the daughter that is the main daughter of the movie. Like the
from
main,
Juju to Booty?
Yeah, Joy versus Tupac-y. Like, they don't feel connected.
Inescapably intermingled and yet distinct.
But they don't feel connected to me at all. Like, the way that the movie presents the climax is that the mom pulls the daughter out of the everything bagel, which is a weird sentence to say, but pulls her out, and then this leads into them having a conversation about how they basically hate each other and ruin each other's lives, but they still love each other, I guess? And it doesn't really go anywhere, and then the movie just kind of ends on that note, besides going to, you know, showing the whole, like, oh, they went back and filed their taxes correctly.
Well, they're finally willing to talk
whatever,
to each other.
Yeah.
But that is concurrent with the other expressions of their relationship concluding, such as when they are both portrayed as being stones in
and
a lifeless universe.
And somehow coming to life.
Evelyn's rock is, like, turns around with googly eyes at one point and starts, like, shuffling, despite being a rock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Towards Joy's rock, who's like, no, go away, and starts shuffling herself towards the precipice of a cliff. And when Joy's rock throws herself off the edge, Evelyn's rock ultimately is like, fuck it, I'm going down with you.
Right.
And also yeets herself. That happens at the exact same time.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, like all of the client, that's all tied up with her falling into the everything bagel and being pulled back out. Yeah. It just doesn't feel like that, it feels like the
Djibouti.
Yeah, that chick. It feels like the evil chick is kind of just destroyed in that moment, and we're left with just the expression of the character, which is Joy. But because so much of this movie was centered on the two of them kind of trying to understand each other while experiencing all this, but it feels like Michelle Yeoh never loses all of those experiences while her daughter is just her daughter still at the end of the movie. Something about that just doesn't sit right with me and doesn't feel like there's an actual
I think
conclusion
because Evelyn is the everywhere all at once Evelyn.
Mm-hmm.
And Jobu, their daughter Joy, is also the everything everywhere all at once Joy.
Yeah.
And the resolution scene we get where Evelyn and Joy and Waymond outside of their laundromat having had Chinese New Year.
Sure.
It feels, like you said, like Evelyn still has like conscious awareness of all of these other realities and is choosing to be here in this one with her family.
Mm. Yeah.
And maybe it's just not communicated well, but it doesn't feel like Joy also has that awareness of having been Jobu across all
these
I
really don't
universes.
Think she does.
No, I don't think she does.
Yeah, she coalesces into just one expression of herself as opposed to Evelyn, who has embraced this multiplicity of expressions of herself.
Which feels weird from their character. Like, you'd expect it to feel the same for both of their characters.
Yeah.
I think it works from a... what's going on in all these other universes is reflective of the inner turmoil that this laundromat universe Joy is experiencing. And so as you see the resolution happening in these universes of, Evelyn Rock deciding to jump off the cliff and just go for it with Joy Rock.
Sure.
And the pinatas just swinging there, starting to talk. Mm-hmm. And you see all these different universes where they're starting.
The drawings.
Where despite the conflict, they're coming together again.
Sure.
That's very clearly reflected in the resolution at the laundromat universe.
Yeah.
Right. Where Joy is saying, you know what? We just hurt each other. Just let me go. And Evelyn says, no, we might hurt each other.
Well, but no, first she says, okay.
First she says,
then,
yes, but then she changes her mind. It's like,
yeah. And I think that
we may hurt each other, but I don't care. Like, you're actually, I love you and I want you in my life.
I genuinely believe that you're a shitty person, but fuck you. I love you.
She doesn't say that.
I mean, she kind of does.
She says that, like, hey, does. I hate your tattoos. I hate your life decisions. I think you're a complete piece of shit, but we're in this together and I'm not letting go of you.
It's kind
of
what she
doesn't
does.
Say. You're a complete piece of shit.
I think she's saying more like, we're going to keep hurting each other, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're an awful person.
It's a very clearly using Jobu's philosophy against her. It's, hey, here are all these, you're right. Here's all these things that you do that piss me off or that I don't like or that frustrate me.
But I'd still rather be here.
But nothing matters except that I'm here with you.
Yeah.
That just disgusts me.
Okay.
It's a good movie that feels like it should be tighter than it is in a lot of ways.
But it already feels so packed.
Like, I don't mean like that. I just mean stuff like the characters feeling a little disparate at the end.
Gone sure. through some more drafts.
Or no,
I don't know if you could keep the level of comedy
right.
and lightheartedness that comes along with the narrative while making it any more tight. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I think it would be hard.
I think if I were trying to figure out ways to improve this movie, I would have to just like sit down and watch it again because there really is, and it's appropriate given the title of the movie, but there's so much happening at every single moment that it feels like you're trying to drink from a fire hose the entire time that you're watching the movie. And
it does.
Because
it's
of
just
that,
absorbing the details, not even getting that deep into the philosophy it's communicating.
Exactly.
Well, and it does, but it's an experience that I enjoyed nonetheless. And I think part of it may be that the kind of teenage philosophy and frustrations that the characters are going through.
It's a bit through, of a Pixar moment.
That they're going through in this movie are ones that resonate with me just from my own like teenage experiences, mm-hmm. right? Where, you know, I might not have that same philosophy anymore, but there was definitely a point in my life as a younger person where I felt that way about the world.
Specifically,
and
the nothing matters thing?
Yeah,
or
nothing matters, what am I doing here, mm-hmm. right? Or okay. the frustrations with my family.
Sure.
Right?
Nobody understands me and all that.
And I mean, it's not a one-to-one, but it's enough that like I understand that. And so to see that on the screen, this is a compelling emotional story for me. Hmm. And I also liked the comedy a lot. I think my favorite part of this movie is hard to pin down again because there's so much going on. I think I'll pick one and say that, I was going to say the butt plug fight, but I think I'll change it and say Waymond. I really like Waymond.
I really like Waymond too.
Yeah.
I like his consistency for his family. And although he does come off as like a big loser in some of these,
there's a reason we called him Beta Waymond.
Right. Even in those universes where he is a loser, you can still see his care for his family kind of shine through, even though he needs to step it up in other areas. And I like that. I like that his philosophy was be kind. My least favorite part of the movie is some of the stuff we talked about. Specifically for me, it's going to be the everything bagel and just how it, like, I think it's neat, but I don't think story-wise it fits nearly as well as it does metaphor-wise.
It felt like they were really trying for a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy feel of a thing. Yeah.
But I really enjoyed the movie overall. I want to watch it again just to see what else I pick up from it and if I can understand it a little better on second watch through. And I'll give it 4 out of 5hot dogs coming mustard and ketchup.
My favorite part is also Waymond. But specifically what I mean is I've forgotten the actor's name. It's something Lee Kwan. You said it earlier, but
Short
it,
Round.
Yeah, I think that
not Short Round.
He is Short Round. He is Short Round.
Yeah,
from
I know. But, yeah, yeah, okay, I know. Okay. But we're not. You're but not, his name's not Short Round.
Oh, okay, I see. Yeah, I was like,
it's Kehui Kwan.
Kehui Kwan. He did a incredible job acting this part. I was extremely impressed with him, and I'd like to see him in other stuff just because of how much I enjoyed him.
Has he been in other stuff in between? Surely he's been in other stuff.
I don't think a lot of stuff.
He may have tried. He's like, I've seen some interviews with him about this. And it's one of those, it's kind of like if you've seen Brendan Fraser's reaction to the fans' reaction to the whale and how he's just like very touched that people care that he's back in the movie. And that's very similar to Kehui Kwan's, where he's like, I didn't know if I'd get another shot. And this is like, to have this kind of reception to people. Aww.
Yeah,
responding to me in this role is really blowing me away.
Yeah, I've seen him, you know, his reaction, like hanging out, like him seeing Harrison Ford for the first time in a very long time. Yeah. Like, just he seems like a very incredibly sweet human being, and I really appreciate that from him. That said, my least favorite thing about this movie is a tie between his philosophy and the philosophy that the movie overall espouses, which partly is based on the fundamental assumption of that philosophy, which is nothing matters.
Okay.
Fuck that. Even if it's true, like even if that is the actual reality of reality, you don't have to believe that. Like if nothing matters, then it doesn't matter if you believe that nothing matters, because nothing matters. So just don't believe that nothing matters. I have never understood I have kind of understood the allure of it in that if nothing matters, you can do whatever you want, which is sort of what they're saying at the end of the movie. And the movie is saying you can do whatever you want. So spin it in a positive way. Be kind, essentially.
Sure.
Fuck that. No, he is the kind of this movie.
Embattled in the fundamental conflict of this film, which is the battle between optimistic nihilism versus just pure pessimistic nihilism.
Pure pessimistic nihilism is correct nihilism. Optimistic nihilism is just stupid and a way of
getting
through
life. Saying that you yourself espouse.
No, what I'm saying is that the nihilism itself is incorrect under any assumption. If nihilism were correct, there's no reason to behave as though it were. You can just ignore nihilism as an idea because it's a pointless idea. That's my critique
of
that.
People come to that conclusion because
emotions
are
different.
As they see it, an inevitable conclusion.
I am explaining my conclusions. I understand that people feel differently.
Rick, I understand that those are the conclusions you're coming to, but just come to different ones.
Yeah, just have better conclusions.
My conclusions are better. Things matter.
I mean,
done.
That's fair.
That's better. Anyway, so it is difficult for me to engage with this, but especially difficult for me to engage with Wayman's be nice part of this, because him being quote unquote nice is just him like putting a smile on shitty situations instead of making them fucking better. He could make decisions and make his life and his wife and his child and everyone around him lives better by like working at that and doing it, but instead he sits and is happy, and so because he is content in his shit, it makes everything else around him worse than it has to be. Fuck that. Stop being nice and fix your life.
That's like that. That's that universe.
Yeah, and it's
another universe.
It is the explicit worst version of his wife's universe, and he's a part of
that. That's what I'm saying. Is like you're tuning in on what is canonically the worst universe, and you're like, well, it's making life shitty. Well, yes, the worst universe.
But the movie is portraying
the other ones. It's not.
But the movie is portraying his be nice thing as a profound good statement. Clearly, it is not even within the context of the movie itself, because it's part of the worst possible universe.
It's also a part of the other universes that aren't the shitty universe.
Not really, because I would argue that a big part of what makes Alpha Wayman so much more attractive and interesting as a character and a figure is that he's not just nice. That's still a part of who he is. He still is trying to put a happy face on everything, but he is not doing the nihilistic side of that, which is the, well, things are the way they are. I can't change them. I'll just smile about it and
agency.
Be happy. He has agency. He takes control of his life.
Beta Wayman does not have agency.
Exactly. I think I have gone on long enough about my least favorite part.
Sure.
I'm going to give it now my rating. I think this is a fantastically made and told movie. I'm very impressed with it. I don't want to watch it again. I have no interest in watching it again. But even so, I can't deny the style of this movie. I can't deny the cinematography of it. I can't deny the writing of it. This is an excellently made movie. I could, if I did watch it again, I could probably be convinced to give it a 5. On this one, when I'm not, I think, fully able to absorb every detail, I can't really give it a 5 on this one. I'm going to give it 4.5 Alpha Waymans out of 5.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent movie. Yeah. I just fucking hate what it says.
Brian, what do you think?
There's a lot to digest
here. there is a lot to digest.
I don't know what the trope is, but I've been getting a lot at like fucking Evangelion.
Hold on.
Oh, okay. How to Train Your Dragon.
Let him cook.
fucking what else? Toy Story. Like a million things are basically let go of your childhood and enjoy life as it is, even though it's shitty. And I fucking cannot stand endings that end like that.
It's because existentialism is an incredibly popular movement among art right now. Yeah, that's what it is.
I dig it. I don't like it, though.
High five. Greed. 100%.
It is a... I don't know if it's full-on fucking, like, part of the nihilism thing that Rick was talking about, but I'm so tired of, like, universes where amazing things exist, and then they're like, let's just give up the amazing things and live with a regular life so that people who live regular lives and watch this movie can feel good about living regular lives. I don't fucking come to movies to feel good about living my regular ass life. I want to see the stuff that you want to escape from reality. It's like going into D&D and always playing a fucking human. Like you've been playing a human for 20 fucking years. This is your chance, man. You could be anything. You could be like at least be an elf. Like at least be a not human human.
I fucking love that we're in the universe where we're friends.
I mean, that's cool and all. That's great. But what if at the end of fucking Yu-Gi-Oh, they're like, let's give up card games and become fucking...
accountants.
Yeah, accountants and shit. Always remember how we played card games fondly. Like the end of fucking How to Train Your Dragon. We can't live with dragons anymore because they're in... Then fucking fix it, man!
Wait.
How to Train Your Dragon 3.
At the end of How to Train Your Dragon.
Brian's making allusions to a whole bunch of things that he's going to have to go into more detail to substantiate.
Grigman, everything is just like, we can't do this anymore for no good reason. They have ended Digimon like 4 or 5 different times. Like every time, just like, you can't live with your Digimon anymore. I'm sorry. That is a figure of your childhood. You have to give it up and go and be lawyers.
The way that I relate to what Brian is saying is when Ash gives up Charizard in one of the earliest seasons of Pokemon, and it doesn't make any fucking sense why he does it.
But you know what happens? He can get other fucking Charizards instead, it's like, we have to let all the Pokemon go into space and we all be can't be 10 years old anymore. Like, fuck that.
Yeah.
It's like the reason you hated the first part of Hook.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
no, it is exactly the, except if you make it to where that's, no, that is how fucking Hook ended. It's where magic doesn't exist, except magic does exist. They're just not going to play with it anymore. They could have gotten their kids and their wife and being like, let's all go to Neverland and actually have a good fucking time instead of being pirates.
Hook and just stay here.
They don't even have to kill Hook. Just get along with Hook. Hook kind of wants what they want too.
They did magically kill Hook at the end of that movie, so they don't even have to kill Hook. They can just go back and live forever.
I think Hook just
fun.
Fucking peaced in that movie. He's just like, I'll come back again while I'll smoke screen right now.
Yeah.
But anyway,
ninja smoke screen.
I appreciate Wayman as my favorite part just because he actually, in his shittiest version, like her shittiest version, I appreciate him having a coping mechanism that is like, it's not just. The way the Kung Fu famous version of her when she was talking to the other successful him, like, he wasn't saying it was being weak. It was, like, strategistic every time I appreciate them saying why. It's not just him,
they presented the best version of that philosophy.
In this universe, he presumably is also trying to make his life better because he's getting a divorce in the sense that he thinks his life will be better and her life will be better if they split up.
I think
he even says he's like, the reason that we are the way we are right now is because we don't talk about stuff.
Yes, and that's what they need to do.
And I'm trying to kickstart the conversation about our life by giving you these. I don't think he wants to divorce her. It's clear that he doesn't want to divorce her.
Well, no, because in the main universe, he keeps trying to talk to her and she's still just caught up in her shit.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that the divorce papers were his like hammer to get in there and make her stop and consider him and actually talk to him. I don't think he actually wanted a divorce.
No, I don't think he wanted a divorce, but I think he thought it would be the best option at this point if she didn't.
He's putting his finger over the nuclear buttons so that she will talk to him.
Mm. But fucking,
I don't even know if I want to rate this. I just want everyone out there to know that I'm really tired of the fucking, like, give up on everything, living complacent lifestyle.
Yeah, yeah.
Give up fantasy. Fucking...
Never give up fantasy.
Yeah. 3.5 out of 5 googly eyes.
All right, all right. Caleb.
How was this on your second watch?
I have to say that I liked it better on the second watch. And that is because a lot of the components of our conversation discussing this movie are things that I hadn't given a great deal of thought to on the first time through. Mm-hmm. So, and that highlights for me a feature of this film, which I find to be hard to come by these days, which is the rewatchability factor. And that's particularly important for me because I'll watch something like a Marvel movie, and while it has all the flashy lights, I have no desire to watch it again ever.
You barely have the desire to watch it the first time.
Yeah. I literally don't. Anyway, whereas this film on the second watch through is only better than it was the first time. And that, thanks to this conversation, kickstarted this idea, which... for the moment, I'm going to call the Pixar factor, which is that they historically, I haven't watched a lot of the recent ones. So I'm talking about like the era of WALL-E and Monsters, Inc. And the stuff prior to that.
Sure.
They did a masterful job of creating a film where if you're a parent, hypothetically, I'm not one, and you're dragging your kid to see it, you are going to have a very entertaining time. And so is your progeny. Mm-hmm. And I think that they have included a component of that where it doesn't really matter what it is you want to get out of this movie. You're still going to have a good time and come away with it with food for thought. So the manner in which it is written, I only appreciate more having seen it a second time now. And I'm more impressed by it, if that's not perfectly obvious by now.
That being said, I don't think this is like fun for the whole family. The butt plug fight scene kind of. Well, no,
they wouldn't understand what was going on.
You know, it's stuff like that that I would be, that I am just, I'm so inclined to not think about when I'm thinking about, like, you know what? Here I am. It's Thanksgiving. The family's all together. What should we watch, guys?
Yeah.
I might be like, hey, guys, let's watch this. Completely forgetting that there is a censored butthole with a butt plug inside of it that is on screen for a good 10 minutes.
Just watch RRR. It'll be perfect. Uh-huh. That's fun for the whole family. No, but I think what Caleb's getting at is that, like, this movie, like early Pixar movies and like all really good stories, it has that crunch. It is saying something while also entertaining you. And that's not
that's
what Marvel does anymore.
Part of my beef with it, though, is that every movie has a lesson in it. Any movie has a lesson. Even movies that like try not to have a lesson, you can take a life lesson from.
Sure.
You don't need to shove it down my throat with a life lesson.
But this one isn't, I don't think, shoving it down your throat. This one is explaining and unfolding what its message is throughout the entire movie. It might be doing it ham-fistedly at some points, but I think that partly goes along with the humor. It's the difference between like this movie and, say, Ant-Man. Like, Ant-Man has a lesson. It's love your family. They're important.
Family.
But like, it doesn't really explain that or get into that or explain like the difficulties of that. It doesn't really tell you that in a way that hits you. It's just, it's reminding you, hey, you already care about family, so let's pull that out. This movie is explaining a philosophy of being in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So for me to put my finger on specifically my favorite component, it has to be the actress that played Evelyn, whose name as a Westerner.
Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Michelle Yeoh. It's probably still a Western pronunciation of what's actually her name.
I don't know.
Anyway, here we are.
I don't know, yo.
I think that this film would not exist if not for the acting range of Michelle Yeoh.
She did not get enough.
There is so much action, and she executes it all flawlessly, despite the fact she's obviously not in her 20s anymore.
Yeah.
In addition to that, the emotional range that she brings to the table is excellent.
Agreed.
I can't point it. I can't poke a single hole in her acting. It's the physical components and the emotional components. She hit the nail on the head with every single one of them.
Agreed. Like she was incredible. We did not give her enough credit in the course of this podcast.
I think the only critique I can really give it, I don't disagree necessarily with what you guys have said. The philosophy is something that is difficult. Like, people are going to have different opinions on that. I like the fact that they included that in the course of the meals that they served you. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't like exactly what it tasted like, it certainly added a great deal of dimension. I suppose what I'll say is that the component to the story, which is the Alphaverse, while it's one of the first things that you experience that introduces like the multiverse component to it, once things start going, it takes a back seat.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, the only component that you really even currently remember about it is Alpha Waymond. And the fact that his character is Sunset in that, and Alpha Gong Gong, it just kind of disappears in the background, despite being hypothetically one of the center spokes, literally, that this whole story rotates around.
Yeah.
And I think that I even know what they could have done differently, but I would like to think with a little more refinement that it would have been a little more difficult to forget about that sub narrative. Mm. With all that being said, that is hardly a criticism. And I think this movie is excellent and people should watch it. And I am going to give it 5 out of 5 Juju Tabooties.
Not Raccoonies.
Raccoonies. No one gave it butt plugs.
No one did give it butt plugs.
It was too low hanging fruit.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
We talked about the butt plugs. You can't refer to the butt plugs as your.
Raccoonie is probably my favorite, just like joke gag that yes. kept getting repeated throughout.
I was really like, I think I would have liked it better if it was just the background gag of it, of just like.
Where you see the tail poking out the back of his chef's hat.
But it was funny how far they pushed that shit.
Yeah, they definitely did. If you want to hear us push shit into way too far directions, you can listen to more of our episodes.
Speaking of butt plug.
If you want to hear us talk about our butts, you can listen to more.
We have
of
a
our
new
troop.
Sponsor.
Butt plugs.
Oh. I was going into our spiel and you threw me off track.
With a butt plug.
Something, butts and movies. And you can find more of our podcasts on our website, opinionatedpodcast.com. Additionally, we're on social media at OpinionCast on Twitter and OpinionatedPodcast on Facebook. Feel free to reach out to us at our email address, opinionatedmoviereviews@gmail.com. We always love hearing from you guys, whether it's your thoughts on our episodes or suggestions for what we should watch in the future, such as what we should watch for listener request month. Definitely send us your suggestions. If you get a chance, please leave us a rating and follow us on Spotify. Between that and you sharing us with your friends is the best way we have of getting out to new listeners. We always appreciate you guys listening. And until next time,
we're opinionated.
Thanks for listening.